The famed economist John Kenneth Galbraith once wrote, "Some years, like some poets and politicians and some lovely women, are singled out for fame far beyond the common lot." And 1929 was clearly such a year. This week marks the 75th anniversary of the biggest drop in the value in the history of the stock market. That day, October 29, 1929, an estimated $30 billion worth of stock vanished in a freefall that shook investors and brokers down to their garters. Our friend from the world of business, Joe Nocera, editorial director of Fortune magazine, joins us now from our studios in New York. And Joe, for Red Sox fans, it's a wonderful week. And
we yes, it is, Scott. And when you spent your entire life rooting for one team and they finally win the World Series after 8.5 decades, yes, it really feels good. So there's hope.
All right. Let's talk about that fateful day. Contrary to maybe our image of the event, didn't happen all at once, did it?
That's right. You had your erudite quote, so let me give you mine from John Brooks, the great New Yorker writer of yore. He said when the crash finally came, it was so gradual, it was possible to live through a good part of it without realizing it was happening. And on the other hand, it was possible to believe that one had experienced and survived it when, in fact, it had no more than just begun, which is a wonderful way to think about it. Between September and the middle of October, you had these series of what they called market breaks. So the market would break down, and then the break would stop. And one of the reasons it stopped is because the great speculators of the era, people like Jesse Livermore and so on, they would actually plow money into the market. They called this organized support. There was this theory that if you kind of push this money in the market, it would prop up the market and keep it from cratering further. So finally, you get to the end of October, and the really first horrible day, they called that Black Thursday. That was October 24th. And there were a lot of people who thought that was the crash. And finally, you have Tuesday, where you have this combination of huge volume for those days and a huge drop in the stock market. And even then, you know, it wasn't over. Market stabilized for a while, but the fact is that by the summer of 1932, the averages were 1/8 of what they'd been in September of 1929, and they did not again reach the September 29 level for another 25 years.
Was the stock market crash a symptom or the cause of the Great Depression that followed?
Well, this has always been one of the great controversies, and there is a school of thought that believes it was a symptom. But there's another school of thought, which is that the crash took money out of the pockets of people of means, and people of means had been propping up the economy with their spending. That's number one. And the second part of it is that banks had been making a lot of money loaning to people to get into the market. And so when the stock market crashed, those people went broke, those loans went bad, and banks began to fail. And this is the critical element in all of this, is bank failures. Because once bank failed, it meant that people couldn't get their deposits. They lost their money. And it also meant that companies couldn't get money to expand and, in fact, began to shrink.
President Herbert Hoover has been, I think it's fair to say, portrayed caught sleeping. He was indifferent. He was negligent. How fair is that assessment?
People went to him and said, you have to stop speculation. You have to stop the market manipulation. He said, no, this just needs to work out for itself. The Federal Reserve did not get involved. Hoover did not put any pressure on the banks to stop this abysmal lending. And even after the crash and even after banks started failing, he believed fundamentally that this should just work through in a capitalist way and with no intervention.
President Hoover's version of activist was that people should get out and spend money and prime the pump. And we've got a clip from an old Fox movie tune newsreel that we want to play.
My wife thinks I'm a millionaire. Last night after we came back from a nice long drive, she wanted me to take her downtown to dinner on a show.
Well, why don't you tell her that you were tired after driving?
Tired, my. I wasn't tired. I was thinking of the dough. I can't be spending money on movies and restaurants with things as they are.
You're afraid to spend a few bucks. Well, I think your wife is right. You big tightwad, you give me a pain in the neck. Here's your wife working around the house all week, slaving, cooking for you, and then you begrudge her a little change on Saturday night. I'm off you.
But Bill,
boy, it was tough to be a newsreel watcher in those days, wasn't it? Wow.
Man.
Nowadays, they pander to the audience, yeah. But those days, they scolded it. Good Lord. Let me ask you about the difference in policies that Franklin Roosevelt brought in.
When Roosevelt came in and he began bank holidays and more importantly, when they passed federal deposit insurance and bank failures stopped, it was proof that one needed to be activist to stop this.
When we talk about declaring a bank holiday, what we mean is he shut down the banks. He prevented people from getting to their own money for a while.
That's absolutely true. And sometimes that's what has to be happened, just to cool people off and prevent the awful specter of people lining up outside a bank to get their cash. And of course, no bank has all that much in cash. That's just not the way banking works.
Let's listen to Franklin Roosevelt addressing the nation.
I can assure you that it is safer for you to keep your money in a reopened bank than to keep it under the mattress.
So much of money and finance is psychological. And if the psychology is keeping my money in the bank is a safe thing to do and a good thing to do, then the banks won't fail.
There are people in the stock market now who say this kind of thing couldn't happen again. Is that true?
The Securities Exchange Commission exists today. It didn't then. In fact, it was born out of this. Federal deposit insurance is now up to $100,000. That's fairly substantial. There are a lot more Americans in the stock market today than there were in 1929. In fact, Main Street and Wall Street are aligned today in a way that they absolutely were not back then. But, I mean, we've just seen the NASDAQ go through an 80% decline, and we've just seen a bubble get burst, and people did get hurt. But, you know, you do not see a lot of people on the corner selling apples the way you did then. Certainly we're going to go through bad times, but it would be really almost unthinkable to have a combination of crash and decade-long depression that we had then.
Decade-long depression. I thought it was 8 decades of depression for Red Sox fans. Nice talking to you, and congratulations.
Thank you, Scott.
Joe Nocera, editorial director of Fortune magazine.
If I ever get a job again, I will never be a snob again. I live within my means, carry a dollar in my jeans. If I ever get a job again, if I ever get a break again, brother, what I'll do to steak again. No turning out the light, bidding my appetite goodnight. If I ever get a break again, I'll get 2 rooms and a kitchenette, furnished comfortably. With 2 rooms and a kitchenette, I'll get a sweet somebody to move in with me. If I ever get a job again, I know that 2 hearts will throb again. She told me with her eyes, we'll be rehearsing lullabies. If I ever get a job again.